Hey, what's up, everyone, and welcome back to the Michigan Golf Podcast. And here we are, back again on another Tuesday. A new week, new Tuesday, new topics in the game of golf. And this year, as I've kind of mentioned on previous episodes, is drawing to a close. And with that, I'm kind of, again, just I've been brainstorming a ton about what kind of content I want to keep bringing you guys, because obviously playing less golf, going to be less course reviews. We're kind of working our way through a bit of an equipment mini series, but I put out a little bit of a kind of a conversation piece with Paul and then another buddy of mine that's been on the podcast, Derek, if you listen to the episode where he was on and contributed some questions, and he's new to the game of golf, so bless his heart, we gave him some time on the pod and he gave us some creative content. But that's what it's all about, having good people kind of join us and see where the day or the game of golf takes us. So anyway, I put out kind of some feelers with those two yahoos, and they brought back a little bit of this and a little bit of that. So Paul had a couple of pretty good ideas. He wants to talk maybe top five courses in Michigan that I've played, and he'd like to get in on the action on that episode. Derek had a couple of good ideas with biggest golf surprise of 2020 and maybe a 2021 kind of bucket list of golf courses I want to play and why. That'd be pretty cool. I think giving you guys some things to look forward to for the 2021 season would be pretty fun. I think that add some value, but we'll see when the time comes. One that Derek kind of brought to the forefront of my mind that I've been thinking about for some time, and I just haven't quite decided what I want to deliver and how I want to deliver it, but I kind of wanted to dish some creative ways to train during the off season. Now that obviously the golf is winding down, the temperatures are getting awfully cold out. I'm still playing this weekend, and I was just talking with a couple of guys I'm going to be playing with, and I think we're playing on Sunday in a scramble, and it's a high of 44 degrees. So I don't do cold weather, so I'm not super stoked about that. At a 9 a.m. shotgun, it's going to be chilly, and so I'm going to have to bundle up. And when I bundle up, I put on too many layers, and then I don't swing very freely, and my hands get cold and I don't putt very well, and just all kinds of adverse effects happen for me when it gets cold out. I'm a Southern kind of cold-blooded kind of guy. Michigan is kind of where I've been, but if I could be somewhere back down south and play golf all year round, I would do that in a heartbeat. But the idea of giving you guys some creative ways to train during the winter is awesome, because I'm transitioning that way right now. This is about the time of the year where I start to shift my focus into two things. One that I've been talking about, kind of optimizing my equipment and getting ready for what I want in my bag and how I'm going to be most successful in the upcoming golf season. And then I start to shift my focus to my body. And I've kind of dipped a little bit into that as well, talking about the Orgain partnership. And there's a lot that goes into my training regimen and what I do to better my body and my fitness. And then there's a lot of golf specific stuff that you can do too. So whether it's flexibility, mobility stuff, strength stuff. So I think that's a good opportunity too, to get you guys into some cool stuff for the winter months. But for today, we are going to stick with the equipment mini series in a limited capacity, because I wanted to kind of keep working down the bag and go into irons. And irons, I really didn't know where I kind of wanted to dial in the focus, so we're going to skip that for now. And we're going to go to the wedges, because wedges are fun and they're scoring clubs and they allow you to be creative around the greens. And I just got Paul sold on a set of TaylorMade milled grind wedges not that long ago, which he's still getting comfortable with and getting used to in his bag. I played with a couple of guys, a couple of listeners on this past Sunday. We played out at Quail Ridge, and one of the guys had a new TaylorMade milled grind wedge in his bag as well. So that was cool to see, just kind of people taking little tidbits from the podcast and trying to incorporate them into their everyday game. So I figured, what the heck, why not go there next? Let's talk wedges, all kinds of stuff to talk about there. So I figure after we take a quick break and get a quick ad, as always, let's get back and talk wedge game. Awesome, guys, welcome back from that quick ad. And prior to the ad, I did already mention Orgain. It's been a couple episodes in a row, I think, that I've kind of drop that new partnership, and that's been a super fun one. I'm not going to go into a ton of detail on it. If you've been tuning in on the regular, you've probably already heard my non-ad Orgain ad, but if you haven't, just check it out. Orgain.com. Want to try some cool fitness and nutrition stuff, code MIGOLF30. And again, that's the number 30. So don't try spelling it out because the promo code won't work. And I'd like to save you guys 30% on whatever you're trying to accomplish in your fitness and nutrition goals. So anyway, on to the next. And so again, we're going back to the wedges. And wedges are scoring clubs. And who doesn't want to score better? And I know if you've been a regular listener to the podcast, I've kind of preached quite a bit about the importance of the short game, and whether you're trying to break 100 or 90 or 80, getting up and down around the greens and putting yourself, I mean, shoot, depending on your ability and your skill level, and kind of your wedge range is going to differ a little bit. But either way, I mean, if you're around the greens, getting up and down is going to save you so many strokes. And so up and down, that's a combination of hitting a good pitch shot, a good chip shot, a good bunker shot, and then knocking in the putt. So sticking with the wedges specifically, I do have to give a shout out to my boy Derek. We've been playing a little bit of golf. He's the new guy to the game, and kind of he's been a loyal listener on the podcast. So I'm super appreciative of that, because again, being new to the game of golf, and he enjoys it. He has a good time. We get out and have a good time with our buddies, and I mean, his skill level is very, very, I don't know. I mean. He's just new to the game. Let's leave it at that. But this guy, he's got this bag of garage sale clubs. And I want to say the highest lofted club in his bag is a 9-iron. But I tell you what, chipping and pitching kind of goes beyond the wedges. And I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on this in this podcast, because I can't do what Derek does. Derek is he's an anomaly. He gets up there around the greens. So we'll play a lot of just kind of little scrambles. So Paul and another buddy of ours, Evan, and we'll team up against Derek and I. And we've been playing these 2-on-2 scrambles lately. And if we miss the green, Derek, I usually let him hit first. And he pulls out his 9-iron and some way, somehow hits this high, delicate, soft, supple little pitch shot. And the dude it's unreal. He's had numerous occasions where he's chipped it or pitched it closer with this sachet little 9-iron shot than I do with the wedges that I actually use when I'm hitting the shot the way I would normally hit the shot. So again, cool thing about the game of golf. You've got this guy who new to the game, only has been out probably maybe a half a dozen times this year, and playing with these garage sale XPC clubs, and then you got me who practice. I've got a club in my hand on the daily, and a short game is always a huge part of my practice. But it's so fun watching this guy go out with his 9-iron, just knock it in there to tap in range. He's a really good pitcher of the golf ball with his 9-iron, and I could never do that. I'm never going to try to do that, and I'm not going to try and explain to you guys how to do that. That could be content for another episode. We'd love to get Derek back on, and if he can kind of go into a little more detail into his technique on how he hits these buttery little 9-iron chip shots, I think that'd be valuable, because it's all about versatility. The short game is all about versatility, and that's why there are so many wedge options out there. And if you guys shot for wedges, I know there's kind of two schools of thought, and I play with a lot of guys who, and you know, Paul included, I'm going to throw him into this as well, but I've played with a lot of guys that have had the same wedges in their bag for a decade, and maybe they don't play a super ton, maybe they don't practice a bunch, so grooves last longer. I mean, you get guys like total opposite end of the spectrum. I mean, tour pros, those guys switch out their wedges countless times a year. Sometimes some guys do it every event, some guys do it a couple times a year. I personally always put new wedges in the bag every year, and I'll usually kind of I'll keep a set just kind of on the maybe up against the wall in my office and in my closet, in my garage, wherever they are, because I like to occasionally just kind of keep an extra set just for a practice set or to kind of keep the gamers out of it, as long as the specs are the same. But to kind of start with the wedges, you've got just such a multitude of options. And again, maybe you're one of those guys that has had the same set in your bag for 10 years. And maybe that's worked for you. And that's awesome, because I think wedges are not too dissimilar from the putter. I think totally opposite of the driver and other things that maybe I've kind of preached, getting fit, getting things dialed in, whether it's the right shaft, the right head, all the different combinations of stuff. Wedges are just, they're feel clubs. These are the clubs that you want to step up to, whether it's a 100-yard shot, 110-yard shot, all the way down 80, 70, 60, 50 to greenside stuff. You want to step up and you want to know that the wedge that you're holding in your hand is what's going to help you put the ball as close to the hole as possible. And that's where the value is. So there's a lot of technology in wedges. There's a lot of different specs, but I think these kind of fall more in the category of the putter where, yes, there's tech, yes, there's specs, but it's so feel-based. And so for me, just to kind of paint the picture of what I kind of look for, and I've gone back and forth. There's, again, with so much of golf, there's multiple schools of thought, but what wedges do you put in your bag? So when it comes to what lofts, it's all about kind of filling the distance gaps. And so pitching wedges these days, I got to say, pitching wedges are right around that 46, 47, maybe 48 degree loft range. And you're going to hit your pitching wedge X distance. And so what are you going to do to cover that gap from whether it's 140 yards and in, 130, 120, however far you hit your pitching wedge, what are you going to do to cover that gap from that yardage back to the green? And you can get, they have gap wedges. Gap wedges usually range around 50 to 52 degrees. Then they've got sand wedges, which are typically the 54 to 56 range. And then they have lob wedges, which are right around that 58 to 60. And yeah, there's kind of the extremists who have a 62 or a 64. I mean, shoot, I think I saw a dude on YouTube the other day hitting an 80 degree wedge. And I don't know what you're going to do with an 80 degree wedge besides nearly hit yourself in the face. So that one's not ever been in my bag, and it was fun as heck watching this dude try to hit it, cause he was just hitting these unreal flop shots. But again, that's more for entertainment purposes than for scoring. So back in the day, I always kind of just looked at those kind of loft gaps to kind of fill the yardage gaps. And so for me, my pitching wedge has always been right around that 48 degree mark. And so if I can kind of fill those gaps in steady increments, then I've pretty much got the spread covered. And so I currently go from a 48 degree pitching wedge. I go up 4 degrees to a 52 degree gap wedge, up another 4 to a 56 degree sand wedge, and then up another 4 degrees to a 60 degree lob wedge. And again, that gives me 4 degrees of separation between every wedge in my bag. And that leaves a ton of versatility and probably almost too much in some ways, because my gap wedge, the 52 degree, is, aside from my three iron that I've talked about in previous episodes, is probably the second most underutilized club in my bag. I actually would say this year I probably do hit 3 wood more than I hit my 52 degree wedge. And so, again, I mean, do you need it? Do you want it? Does it help you? I mean, it's everybody's different, so that's kind of figuring out what's best fit for you. Other wedge setups that I've tried, my pitching wedge again has always been in that 48 degree range. Some sets these days do come a little stronger, so you're probably looking at a 46 for most manufacturers, unless your lofts are on the softer side. But again, you're probably looking more at a 46 degree pitching wedge in your bag. So what's going to kind of fill that void and fill that gap for you guys? Because I used to go pitching wedge. I did 56 and 60 for a while. I had no gap wedge. And then I just ended up having a spot in my bag where I thought, well, might as well stick a 52 degree wedge in there. So let's give it a shot. In years past, I've tinkered and gone, I've left the 56 and 60 behind, and I'll go pitching wedge to a 54 degree and a 58 degree and eliminate the gap wedge altogether. But that, again, that kind of depends on what I've got at the top of my bag. If I'm carrying a driver, obviously, and then a 3-wood, a 5-wood, maybe a hybrid, maybe a 3-iron. If I'm kind of moving things around on the top end of the bag, the bottom end of the bag usually has to obviously follow suit, because you don't want to break that 14-club rule in competition, because otherwise you get penalized pretty good. I'm not sure. They might have changed the rules on that, but I know penalties used to add up if you had more than 14 clubs in play for any duration of holes. So, but anyway, so to go along with lofts, obviously you're going to be able to execute different types of shots with those different lofts. But another important thing to pay attention to is bounce. And this is one that Paul and I kind of went back and forth on quite a bit. And I'm very similar to his mentality in this, and I always have been. And I think it's from playing, one, having a kind of a steeper angle of attack with wedges, and then two, back in high school, starting after high school, I used to go out to Arizona quite a bit and I'd play desert golf. And the firmer the turf or the steeper angle of attack, the steeper angle of attack, that's, we could argue on that one. But firmer turf, generally, you want less bounce. And bounce is going to be the angle between the leading edge of the club, so that leading edge that's going to cut into the turf, and then the back edge of the wedge, which is, on the low side, you're looking at probably 6 degrees of bounce, so very, very small. On the high side, you'll get up to maybe 12, 14, I think maybe I've seen 16, but again, they all serve a different purpose. And so just to kind of shed some light on that, again, the firmer the turf, the lower the bounce, because if you go hitting into some pretty hard ground, if you're hitting off hard pan, or heaven forbid you're hitting off a cart path, and whatever that might be, if you've got a wedge with a ton of bounce, there's a very, very minimal chance you're going to catch that ball solid. You're going to hit a lot of leading edge because the back of that club, the bounce, is going to make contact with the ground, the turf, the cart path, whatever it might be, and it's going to ricochet, causing you to blade it, So just kind of being the way that I've always been, I've always preferred low bounce wedges. And so for me, that's always been on a lob wedge, right around 6 to 8 degrees. On a sand wedge, I might go 8 to 10. And then back on the gap wedge, I'd probably also sit in that 8 to 10 range. And I've tinkered before because there is a lot of value to more bounce. And especially depending on where you're playing at around the state of Michigan, we deal with a lot of softer turf conditions. So sometimes, depending on what your strike pattern is, what your attack angle is, low bounce wedges are not going to be your cup of tea, because you get into some soft turf and that wedge is going to dig. You're going to hit shots fat. They're going to come up short. You're going to chili dip them. You're going to chunk them. There's all kinds of golf terminology I could throw out there to kind of indicate all the nonsense and the shots that you guys don't want to hit. But let's focus on what you do want to hit. You want to hit tight, crisp wedge shots, preferably with some spin. Who doesn't want to spin the ball? So again, turf conditions, turf interaction is kind of where you're going to get that crisp, clean, spinning wedge shot contact. And in the conditions we have here in Michigan, a lot of guys are going to benefit from more bounce. So, and I've even kind of taken, I've adapted to that, because a lot of the courses I play, again, soft turf. So soft turf, soft sand, and more bounce is going to be beneficial for you guys in the long run. And so my wedges right now, I go from a lob wedge, which has 9 degrees of bounce, I think, 8 or 9. I'd have to check. But it's on the higher side for me. My sand wedge has 11 or 12. So again, on the higher side for me personally. And then my gap wedge, my 52 degree, is back in that 9 or 10 range. So they're all pretty comparable, but there's a little variability there. And the more bounce, what I've found is I've kind of fallen into that rut of being that guy that always, you get around a green, you pull a 60 degree wedge, because back in high school, my high school time, so 2005, 2006, and then in the college in 07 and 08, like, flop shots were cool. High soft shots were cool. More spin around the greens was cool. And the lob wedge allowed me to do that. So over time, I've become that guy that just, you get around the green, who cares what else is in the bag? I'm pulling the lob wedge out. If I've got 50 feet of green to work with, or 5 feet of green to work with, I'm hitting that shot with a 60 degree wedge. Is that right? Probably not. And when you've got 50 feet of green to work with, Derek's 9-iron is going to probably chip you a lot closer to the hole than your lob wedge is going to. I've got another buddy who used to always do this too, chip with a pitching wedge, a 9-iron, even as low as an 8-iron, and hit those bump and runs, because they're tight little shots. I've never been good at it, but that's just one of those things that comes with practice and feel. And or if you're Derek, you just have just the God-given ability to hit soft, buttery 9-iron pitch shots. But not in my bag of tricks. So for me, I've always pulled the 60. I want to hit that high shot, whether it's over a bunker, whether it's out of the fairway, out of the approach, out of the fringe, whatever it might be. But this year, I've kind of tried to expand on that, especially this spring when everything was shut down due to COVID. I spent a lot of time practicing around the greens, because I could find a golf course that had a practice green that was open enough until they maybe told you to take a hike if it was still closed and stuff like that. But I mean, you could go out and you could hit putts and hit chips and stuff like that, and most people were pretty friendly about it, because we all love the game of golf. So I'd get out there and I was like, shoot, you know what? Let's work on this. Let's hit some shots with a 56 degree wedge. What's different? How does a 56 degree vary from a 60? And then what do pitch shots or chip shots look like with a 52 degree? And so long story short, for me, I've started using my 56 degree wedge a lot more out of bunkers, because that added bounce makes bunker shots so much easier. Bunker shots are one of those shots that nobody wants. And not only do we not want them, but where do you practice a bunker shot? A lot of the courses I go to, not a lot of them have greenside practice bunkers. So they've got the practice putting green, and maybe they have a separate chipping green, but not a lot of places have a practice bunker. And so it becomes kind of one of those shots that you don't really deal with until you're on the course. And then how many times have you guys been on the course, either in a bunker yourself or when you're playing partners or competitors in a bunker, and they hit it and it stays in the sand and just doesn't get out? And it's again, it's just kind of using the wrong club for the job. I mean, you don't try and hit it, knock it. You don't try and knock in a nail with a Phillips head screwdriver. You use a hammer. I mean, you guys know it's we've got 14 clubs in our bag, so we might as well make the most of them and put them to the right use. So a 56-degree wedge with a little extra bounce for me has been money out of greenside bunkers. It's one of those where I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that I'm going to hit this bunker shot, and at the very, very least, whether it gets close to the hole, far from the hole, whatever, it's not going to stay in the bunker, because nobody wants to hit two bunker shots consecutively. It's just not anybody's favorite thing to do, so I like to save my beach time for other things like picnics or flying kites or I don't know what other things people do at the beach. But beyond that, I've also worked with the 52 degree. My 52 degree has become not a weapon of mass destruction, but a weapon of minimal destruction. I still don't use it all that often around the greens, but I actually have learned to identify when to use it and how to use it. So again, those shots where you do have 50, 60 feet of green to work with, if you've got the room, I mean, you read it in countless golf magazines or golf websites or whatever. I mean, they tell you to get that ball on the ground as soon as possible so it starts rolling like a putt, which I've always had a tough time doing. I've always been fly it there, control the spin, and get the ball to check and bite and leave yourself 3 to 5 feet. I always thought that trying to do anything different was harder and brought more variables into play. I thought it, if I tried to get a 52 degree or a pitching wedge off the approach or the fringe from 50, 60 feet away, I thought if I got that ball on the ground sooner, then I have to control speed, I have to control distance, I have to be attentive of like what's the green doing, where are the slopes at, what's the break look like. And I always thought that was complicating things, but the more that I practice it, the more I appreciate that shot. And again, I have not dialed it in where I do it with anything more than a 52 degree wedge, but I mean, I do know guys that do it with pitching wedge, 9-iron, 8-iron, and so on. But again, it's kind of all about versatility. And whether you've got one wedge, two wedges, three wedges, my buddy Evan, him and I played last week Sunday, and he currently in his bag, he doesn't have anything more than a pitching wedge, and he wasn't blessed with the ability to hit Derek's 9-iron shot. And so for him, getting around the greens, and he doesn't have the right tool for the job, it gets tough. And so just be attentive. Think about what's in your bag. Think about what's going to help give you guys the best results. And do I think you guys all need to go out and buy a set of three new wedges? No, heck no. I mean, find some used stuff. Go out, try. If you're new to exploring wedge options, go try some stuff. I know Paul is, again, I kind of got him sold on this set of TaylorMade milled grind wedges, which I absolutely love compared to the old set of wedges I had. And I've tinkered with, I used to play Titleist, the spin milleds. They are fun. They do spin. I mean, they're not called spin milled wedges for nothing. And you will get that bite, especially when they're fresh and they're new and the grooves are super, super sharp. But I had another set of TaylorMade wedges in the bag prior to these milled grinds, which were really clanky. And again, going back to wedges and deciding what's right for you guys, not only is it picking the right lofts and the bounce angles and stuff like that, and just kind of finding what's right for your approach and your attack, around the greens, but also like what feels good. I prefer softer wedges. I don't like stuff. There's forged wedges, there's cast wedges, and I could go down. This podcast could be hours, hours, hours long just talking about wedges because I could rip through every wedge option you have. If you've been on the Titleist website in any recent time and you've seen it's blows my mind because I don't know how the average consumer decides what Titleist wedges go in their bag, but that's Titleist's game plan. They want you to go get fit for wedges, which is fine. I think that's valuable too. If it's something that you want to do and want to pay the money for, and go get fit for wedges, because Titleist is going to offer you 1,000 different grind options, from fairway grinds to high bounce to low bounce to heel relief to toe relief to so many different options that it scares me to go on Titleist's website because I don't know what wedges do what, and how do I know with so many options that I'm picking the right ones for me? What happened? I mean, I feel like I need to buy one of each of them because course conditions change, playing conditions change, my golf swing periodically changes, and if I'm going to spend $160 on a new wedge, I better darn well make sure it's the right wedge for me. But the ones I've got in my bag are the ones that I like, and they're soft, they spin, they're a nice shape. I like sharp leading edges. That leading edge that sits behind the ball, I like that to be sharp, straight, and square. Not to dog on other manufacturers, because if you guys, Cleveland wedges are, I don't know how popular they are now, but they used to be hugely popular. Cleveland always kind of had a much rounder look to them. The toe was real rounded, the leading edge was real rounded. Say that 5 times fast. And those kind of bubbly looking wedges, I never liked. I don't like curves down there. I like straight, sharp edges. It just feels like I'm going to make crisp, clean, sharp contact. And so, again, it's all a matter of what feels right and what looks right for you guys and kind of what shots you're trying to execute. I do think, just to kind of paint you guys a little bit of a picture of kind of vaguely what might be best, if you are a higher handicap and your short game, maybe you don't practice it that often, and maybe you're looking for something that's going to give you just a little added forgiveness, maybe something that has a little more bounce and is a little, I don't know, not more rounded, but you're going to get more relief from a little extra bounce, little extra. I mean, I don't want to talk about where the hosel is located because we're not going to talk about that. That's dark. But just, you kind of got to do what's right for your game. Don't watch the tour players. Don't try and pick what they're picking, and pick what's right for you, because what's in the goal at the end of the day is for you to shave strokes off your game. And just because Tiger's using this new tailor-made milled grind TW version, I've seen it, I've checked it out, but that's his wedge, man, not my wedge. And I don't know, just maybe guys try it, maybe they love it, maybe they want to use it's the novelty of it. But again, you're the one trying to break 100, trying to break 90, trying to break 80. So what's going to help you do that? And you can't be just getting a good set of wedges in the bag. It's going to help you get up and down, chip it close, knocking the putt. So I'm working with Evan right now. I keep encouraging him to check it out. I mean, get on eBay, get on the Facebook Marketplace, jump on. I mean, there's so many countless avenues to buy golf clubs, and eBay, I tread lightly there. Sometimes I do buy a bit of stuff, and a lot of times I do pick stuff up off eBay just to try it, and a lot of times I'll flip it depending on. But you do have to be very, very careful and very, very conscious, and buy from people you trust. And how do you trust who's on the other end of eBay? I've been doing it enough where I've kind of got a little bit of an experience and kind of know who to go to and what to look for. But fake clubs are no joke. You do not want to buy fake clubs, and eBay's always been an avenue for that. But you can pretty well tell, for the most part. But used clubs are fine for a guy like Evan or for Derek, who's chipping with his XPC 9 iron. Grab some used wedges, whether it's garage sale, pro shops, Facebook Marketplace, whatever. They're tools of the trade, and they're only going to help you improve your score. So I'm trying to think of where else I want to go with wedges. I know I'm checking out a couple of new ones right now. Again, because like I said, I switch out every year, and so I've got a set of tailor-made milled grinds that I've got my eye on that are the raw finish. So those are the ones that are designed to rust over time, and they're sharp. And do I need them? Eh, no. Probably not. Would I like them? Yeah, for sure. But we'll see if they make it into my bag or into my closet, or if I get them and flip them. Who knows? But another cool thing, one last thing I want to mention about wedges is I highly recommend considering what finish you get, because over the years, you'll see a lot of companies have come out with not just the chrome finish, but they'll have more of a satin finish. They'll have a raw finish. A lot of companies are doing black or an oil can type look. I highly recommend, it took me a long time to get used to it and get comfortable, but break away from tradition and kind of what the stereotypical wedge looks like and check out the oil can finish, the raw finish, or the black. My TaylorMade wedges are in the black finish, and they are sweet. And I'll tell you why they're sweet. They're sweet because the finish does wear off. But what is the worst thing? When you're around the green and you're playing in the middle of an afternoon on a Saturday and that sun is up there at about high noon, maybe 1 o'clock, whatever, and you're trying to hit this wedge shot around the green and that sun is glaring right off the face of your shiny chrome wedge, and it drives me nuts. It drives me absolutely bonkers. So I switched to the black finish, and I used to have the black finish in my old Nike wedges. I'd get the ones in Titleist, and I'd get those in the oil can, and now I'm obviously playing the TaylorMade wedges, and I've got those in black. So it's hugely beneficial. I mean, it sounds maybe not sound stupid, might sound kind of ridiculous, but it makes a huge difference when you're on the greens and you can actually see your club face and the ball, and you're not having to squint and just kind of get rid of that glare. But anyway, that's a lot on wedges, and I could go a lot deeper. I feel like I kind of gave you guys a little bit of a high-level overview. I didn't go into a ton of detail, but if you have any questions and if you're looking at wedges and you're a little unsure about maybe what might be best for you, shoot me a message on Instagram, at gsmithgolf. I've enjoyed kind of fielding your guys' questions and getting to know some of you guys as you've continued to kind of get in touch through this Michigan Golf podcast experience. So I'm happy to help. I'm kind of dishing you guys what I like and what I know and what I experience. But if you've got other ideas and want to try something, bounce some ideas off me. I mean, hey, if I don't love talking golf, if it's not obvious that I love talking golf, I mean, shoot, come on. We're here and I got to work really hard to keep these podcasts tight to 30-ish minutes, because I could talk all day on this stuff. But I think that's enough about wedges for today. I think they're hugely important. So evaluate what's in your bag. Is it working for you? And is there anything that you can do different heading into next season that could help make you better? But other than that, kind of a rainy, cold week here. I might try to get out. I know we've got some warm temps coming up on Thursday, Friday. I was really hoping they would bleed into Saturday because I thought I was playing in a shotgun outing scramble on Saturday, which happens to actually be on Sunday now, again, with the high temp of 44 degrees. So I'm already shivering a little bit thinking about that, but I'm going to try and get out at least once this week, and I don't know what capacity that'll be, if it's 9 holes, 18 holes, or where it'll be at. There's a couple courses around here that I have not gotten to play yet this calendar year, and I have not talked about. Stonegate, I think, has not made the podcast yet. That's just up north of Muskegon. That's one of my favorites, and during the fall right now, even though a lot of the leaves have fallen off the trees, Stonegate's beautiful. If I've talked about it already, I'll double back and check those out. But I think that's going to be my goal this week. Get out to Stonegate, check it out, try and get in. I always say this, this is the time of year where you kind of have just kind of redundancy of saying, all right, last round of golf for the year. And then the next thing you know, you get another day where it's like 60 degrees and maybe 55. And you're like, okay, this is the last round of golf of the year. And then another week goes by, same thing happens. And it's, okay, this is the last round of golf of the year. I got out to Quail on Sunday this past weekend, obviously, with a couple of listeners, and I thought that was probably going to be one of the last rounds. Obviously, I've got this event coming up at Thornapple Point this coming weekend, which I'm super excited for. That might be the last round of golf. I don't know. We're getting into the tail end of October, but again, there have been months where I've played in November, I've played in December, I've played in January, and Michigan's crazy. You never know, but I from what I've heard, we're in like the bullseye for bad winter weather, so we'll take the podcast indoors. Again, we'll talk more equipment. We'll talk fitness. We'll talk nutrition. We'll talk flexibility, different things you guys can do to train. Plenty more to come on the Michigan Golf Podcast. But thanks again for tuning in. As always, we'll get another episode out to you guys later this week. But until next time, enjoy the epi. Enjoy the game of golf. And we'll catch up with you guys soon.